Welcome to a podcast of a sermon delivered at the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood in New Jersey. Our congregation is a place where you will find inspiration in the richness of diverse beliefs and the power of community. Detailed information about the Unitarian Society of Ridgewood is available on our website, uuridgewood.org.
I have not forgotten, nor will I forget until all memory fades, the day, the moment in which my father and I parted. We did not put an ocean between us or a country. He did not disown me or I him. We parted as a cloud passing between our hearts, shadowing what we had been, shadowing what we would become henceforth. In this time, I was barely 15 years old, and we had come recently to America from England. And there, he and I had been pals, chums, co-conspirators in fictions and fantasies. For as long as I could remember, each Sunday my father and I would set out together to tramp down village lanes, across meadows, through old churches, churchyards, and burial grounds. We explored ruined castles, fought off Norman invaders, Vikings, black knights. We rode on the rivers, curling through the countryside. We rose and fell in the lochs, scrambled up and down the brambled banks, slipped reverently through ruined abbeys. In the woods, we eluded the archers of Bad King John. Beneath old oaks, my father pointed out where, in the moonlight, elves and fairies held their meetings, fairs and dances, plain for anyone to see who cared to see. And there was the highest toadstool, where the fairy queen held court. And there, amidst the roots, undoubtedly the entrance to the entire elfin land beneath our feet. In a break among the hedgerows, a cow draped her head over the rails, munching, grunting. Father would ask her about the quality of the grass. How's the family? Looks like rain. And there across the field might bounce a rabbit. And my father might say on that day, he was Charlie. And Charlie, he would say, was going home after work to his wife Mabel and the kids, Alice and George. I have never hunted, and I have never killed any creature deliberately. How could one harm Charlie on his way home? So this is who we were before the cloud passed between wizard and trusting apprentice, storyteller and credulous listener, teacher and student. My father taught me how to read and write before I started school. We dabbled with cooking. He had been a short order cook on Cape Cod during a sojourn in America in his youth. Well, lest it seems that in all of this he neglected his fatherly duties, I did suffer an occasional sore backside for whatever broken law, for some boy word escaping carelessly from my lips, for once snitching a couple of shillings set aside on the mantel for the gas meter or the light meters. After one such spanking, I happened to catch the tear in his eye. So all this we brought to America, and for a while we attempted to restore or nurture the past, though there were no hedgerows, no ruined abbeys, no hairy Vikings, and certainly no sniveling Normans. And perhaps most telling of a coming closure, there was hardly a trace in that New England of fairies, elves, or anything extraordinary. We had come, it seemed, to a prosaic land of insufficient age. Each Sunday, as in former times, we did set out on a quest to keep us as we had been to hold back my years. And then that Sunday morning, my father came out to where I shuffled in dread in the gravel of the driveway. I didn't know how much damage I was about to do, but I knew I was about to cast us away. He came to me, sandwiches for us, and a thermos in a bag, and asked if I was ready to go. "Gee, Dad," I said, "a couple of my buddies are picking me up and we're going to go to the baseball game this afternoon." "Oh, all right," he said. "Goodbye." And his face could not hide the forever. He turned and walked away, the golden cord raveling as he went. And somewhere in a distant sheep grazing hill in the tower of some ancient church, a bell tolled. We were not the same, of course. We continued to grow apart in the years that followed, until at his death, now years ago, it often seemed we were barely acquainted. My adolescence was beyond him. He watched helplessly as I tried out various foolish and dangerous ways to become what passed for manliness and Americanness. And as I continued in my education, pursued my dreams and ambitions, I left his fragmented knowledge and his understanding far behind. He had left school at the age of 12 to help support his mother and sister after his father ran away. He was a naturally intelligent and witty man, and he had somehow trained himself to be often mistaken for an Oxford man. But my journey left him by the wayside, as so he felt had life and all hope and possibility. And there he rooted in anger, regret, and self-destruction. He was a man who, had he had a fathering father, had he not been born into abject poverty, had it not been for this or that, for fate or happenstance, had all that was beside the point not been so, he would have been a man whom all the world knew by name. But the sins of the fathers are visited upon the sons from generation to generation. But what did I expect from my father, I wonder? What was it I so desperately needed before and after it was too late? After he no longer knew how to give? Robert Bly, that poet guru of the men's movement, whatever happened to the men's movement? Robert Bly said that what boys and men need from their fathers is blessing, because too few are blessed by their fathers. Blessing, said Bly, is the bestowal of approval and encouragement. Blessing, says Webster's Dictionary, is a thing conducive to happiness and welfare. And without the blessing of a father, all else, it seems, fails to become conducive to happiness and welfare. For some of us, without a father's blessing, his approval and encouragement, nothing ever fully satisfies. Always there is the rising urge to take the small or large success and burst with it through memory's door, shouting, "Hey, Dad, guess what?" And if father is not home, or occupied with his failings, or deep in his despair, his hopeless anger, his envy of his child, where then shall we go for blessing? Sons, daughters, longing hopelessly for their father's blessing, seek blessing in mismatched marriages, some in furious and soul-killing jobs, others into the brief safety of aloneness. Of course, parenting, when it comes right down to it, is an impossible undertaking. Fathering or mothering, the expectations always changing on us, can never be fully met. But it seems to me that in general, we judge our fathers to have fallen short more harshly than we often judge our mothers. Now, some suggest that that's because a mother's love is unconditional and a father's love is not. Maybe so. When I was a practicing marriage and family therapist, I often spent hours with a client, sometimes weeks and months, listening to accounts, real and imagined, of the sins and the shortcomings of the fathers. And many times I would finally have to shift the focus and say something like, "Tell me about your mother." What is it about fathers that has brought them so often and kept them so late in the court of their children's judgment? Now, I'm not talking about the obvious failures, the drunks, abusers, and runaways. I mean what we call the ordinary Joes, your father, my father, you, me. What is it about the task of fathering so many fumble with and finally put aside? Well, I have a theory about fathering. It needs work, and like any good theory, many will find good reason to find it implausible. But I propose that much of what makes fathering so difficult is that fathers are men. Takes a moment to get that, doesn't it? Now, that's not the whole of the theory. That's just the reality. That's just the ground on which the theory is built. I'll go on to propose that men, most men, the vast majority of men, focus the greater part of their attention, of their mental and emotional energy, and their time and attention on achieving and maintaining what they have been led to believe it means to be a man. From the beginning, it has been required of men that they be strong, dependable, in charge, be all that Rudyard Kipling in his poem, If, says, one must grow to be a man. I mention Rudyard Kipling's poem, If, because I believe it to be one of the most frightening poems in the English language. And I'll share the first verse of it with you. If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss and lose and start again at all your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss, if you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will that says, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the humble touch. If neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds of distance run, yours is the earth and everything in it, and which is more, you'll be a man, my son. Well, that's only half the poem. Those are only half the requirements for manliness. And what do I find frightening about that? I remember one of my psychology professors in graduate school talking about all these ifs for becoming a man and saying to our class, your work, ladies and gentlemen, is to be done among those who whisper to themselves, but what if I can't? Kipling's man was the idealized Victorian male. He was epitomized by the colonial British officer, ramrod straight on his white horse, buttoned up to his beard, in a wool uniform in the middle of the desert, prepared to show those ragged beggars screaming before him how an Englishman dies. Now, if by some chance this quintessential man did not die out there, buttoned up with his boots on, he went home to teach his children how to be just like him, endeavoring not to get too close to them in the process. His children, like those turbaned pagans out there, were in need of being civilized. And we Britishers made schools to do that. Now, obviously, most of our fathers And most of us have not come home fresh from gifting the world with civilization at the point of our ceremonial swords. But what all that really boils down to is success. It is impressed upon the male, which is what fathers are made of, that whether they live in an age of Hannibal or Hank, they must above all be successful. And they must be successful at everything from running companies, preaching sermons, playing basketball in the driveway, earning a living, staying alive, and obviously above all, not failing. The truth is, for some men, successfully cutting in line at the exit is about the only hope for self-esteem they'll have today. Now, that's a lot to handle. For most fathers, it doesn't leave much left over for blessing the children, for being a successful father, or even for being conscious of what that might mean. I never met my father's father. To the best of my recollection, my father never mentioned him. Certainly there had been no blessing there, no approval, no encouragement, nothing conducive to happiness and welfare. And so my father strove to succeed without blessing, and always success eluded him, and with that he failed to bless his son. And so again and again the sins of the fathers visited upon the sons from generation to generation. Thank God I have three daughters. Well, a sad story. My story, maybe yours. I'll claim some hope of redemption. There is another poem by David Ray. It's called Thanks, Robert Frost. I repeat it here by way of the redemption of fathers. Do you have a hope for the future? Someone asked Robert Frost toward the end. Yes, and even for the past, he replied, that it will turn out to have been all right for what it was, something we can accept, mistakes made by the selves we had to be, not able to be perhaps what we wished, or looking back half the time, it seems we could so easily have been or ought. The future, yes, and even for the past, that I will become something we can bear, and I too, and my children, so I hope, will recall as not too heavy the tug of those albatrosses I sadly placed upon their tender necks. Hope for the past. Yes, old Frost, your words provide that courage, and it brings strange peace that itself passes into past, easier to bear because you said it rather casually as snow went on falling in Vermont years ago. So that's what redemption is. That's a way of thinking about what redemption is, giving the past hope, where the past itself held none. How do we redeem the past? Surely what was, was. No, what stubbornly remains, blessing the present or reliving its sin generation after generation, the past remains. A novel that has stayed with me for many years is called The Dead Father, and is written by one of the Bartown boys, Donald. It is essentially one long metaphor in which the dead father has become enormous, a veritable giant of a corpse who must be dragged about on a long, long journey by his children. And the only hope for breaking the cycle, for our children's sake, is for us to redeem the past, which is to forgive it, to bless it, a thing conducive to happiness and welfare. For whatever else it might have been worth, I have made some beginning in doing that for myself, saying yes, he did those things, he did not do those things, and he suffered this at the feet of his father, bless him too, and he carried all he suffered into the present, as do we all. And it is not too late for me still, in frequent tears and much puzzlement, still putting it all together and finding it not too late now, even past fathering and into grandfatherly age, it is not too late to bless my children, to seek their blessing upon the self and I and he before him had to be, was not able to be, perhaps, what we wished, or looking back, what we so easily could have been. To fathers and mothers, to all parents, early or late, I say this. Nothing is required of you by the past. I say again, nothing is required of you by the past. That is to say, your unconditional love, your approval, your encouragement. This is a thing conducive to happiness and welfare, and above all, I offer you this. Bless your children. Never read Rudyard Kipling. And bless the children, yours and mine and theirs, and all the children of the world. Amen.